all have dreams, big and small, that create a life in our minds different than our reality. All the while, we watch others seemingly make it happen. I'm Rachel Denson, a farm girl turned mortgage guru, moonlighting as your self-help cheerleader. Together, we'll pull back the curtain with intentional conversations and discover how you get there. Welcome to How You Get There. This is take two. I was on such a great roll and then technology interrupted me. But, you know, second time's a charm, so we're going to start over here. I'm with my friend Drake Widener. Drake is the adult version for me of that friend or that athlete in school that you watch from afar. And it's like naturally did a pace set off of. You didn't know anything about him, but you just saw that they were pretty good and that it was like a level of metric for what you could start striving for in success or somebody that made you continue to push harder. Drake sat for me. I asked him to sit down with me because this dude has just killed the mortgage game and has really squished any excuse most people give themselves when they start in a brand new business. And as I've watched him from afar, I would love to finally hear from him how he got here. He's got a pretty cool story too. Didn't have this background, but has already just absolutely blown his business up and in a very hard market nonetheless. He's a family guy and work-life balance has got to matter to him. I know it does, but I'm here to ask him his true take on it and, you know, quit guessing from afar what he really thinks about some things, because in business, there's so many right ways to do stuff, but I'm always curious. And, you know, I've got the mindset of a seeker that's trying to learn from peers, especially ones that I admire for accomplishing so much and running their business their own way. Drake, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be
here.
Thanks,
Drake.
The feeling's mutual on the admiring. You do an awesome job. And you guys, there's some months where I see y'all's numbers and I just want to throw up because y'all do like 10 units for not very much volume because the loan amounts aren't big up there. So anyway, it's just like, they're working way harder than I am. So anyway, you guys are awesome and I appreciate you having me on.
No, I'm so glad that you decided to join me. I want to cut to the chase and just really, I know about your story a little bit from what you shared at a sales retreat once, but would love to hear from you. How did you get here?
Well, okay. I was coaching. It's all I'd ever wanted to be. Played college football. Mm-hmm. Like football was my life. All I wanted to do was coach. That was it.
Question. How old are you? You're not supposed to ask that, but I am.
I'm 35.
Okay. That's what I thought. I didn't think you were much older than me. So
yeah, no, I'm 35. So I became a head coach at 26. So that was my first head coaching job. I was really young, probably the youngest in the state. And had a lot of success. And like, that was what I was wanting to be. I wanted to be a big time head coach. And the crazy thing was I did that at a small school, left. We had our first daughter, Maggie.
Okay.
When I was doing that.
When did you meet your wife?
Oh, we met in college. Yeah,
okay.
We've been together for 15 years.
Awesome.
Yeah. We met playing in college and then she's awesome. She supports me. And I'll get to that here in a minute on the switch to careers. But we were at Des Arc, which is a small school. I was a head coach there. We had Maggie, which changed my life.
And I mean, you're in Arkansas, like, football country.
Yeah.
Because not, you know, not all these listeners know exactly where you're at. So I got to lay the groundwork for them.
Sorry. That's
no,
right.
It's all good. That's why I'm here. That's what I'm here for.
Yeah, Arkansas. So down south, SEC country, everybody lives and breathes football down here. Like that's what it's all about. So that's all I ever wanted to do and had success, won a couple conference championships and we were winning and rolling and I wanted to be a big school head coach. And so then I left there. That was a 2A school, left there, went to a 4A school as the head coach. Well, at the same time, we had my second daughter, Ella, and I figured out real quick, my priorities started changing and we were working 80 hour weeks and grinding and not making a ton of money and just trying to figure out any way we could to win and be successful. I'm super competitive, always have been. That's probably what drives me in this business. It is. That and my family.
Yeah.
So trying to make money. So, but anyway, so we went there and they had gone 2-8 and we got there and everybody was like, you can't win there. It's just, well, we won the conference championship in year one. So
wow.
We turned it around, won the conference championship in year one, and it about killed me. And we had Maggie and Ella are 15 months apart. So we had a, you know, at that point during that season, I guess it was a 2-year-old and a almost 1-year-old.
Okay.
So they were little and I was away from them. I was having to FaceTime them all the time to see them. And I was like, I don't know if I want to do this anymore because I love my kids.
Mm-hmm.
So I got offered then a 6A head coaching job at a defending state champion. Their coach left. They offered me the job. And that's when I figured out where my priorities were because I turned them down and took a principal job. So it's amazing. My priorities shifted in like a year. So I took a principal job at my alma mater and was there for a year, figured out real quick I did not want to be a principal and that the only reason I got into education was to coach football. And the weird thing was, so now all that to say, here's how I got into mortgage. So
I love that. That's the part I wanted to hear. So you're answering exactly what I was curious about. So you really checked off the football bucket list though, too. I mean,
oh,
almost.
Yeah. I did everything but win a state championship. And I'm like, I coached in the All-Star game, won coach of the year, all these things. And so I started looking at it and I was like, I could coach the rest of my life and not win a state championship. That's like guys do that all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And would have probably won one eventually, but it wasn't worth ring chasing to miss all the time with my kids.
Now, before we move to mortgage, I got to ask. So you've answered my first question, which there was a very specific, not breaking point, but turning point. You know, you saw by just your actions that clearly this wasn't your priority anymore. But if you're willing to, you know, speak and vulnerably, were you seeing those sacrifices at home? I mean, like, was it causing, like, did you have to lose some like ground with like your family and your mental health, or were you aware enough that like you were in a place that you knew to get yourself out before that happened?
Yeah, no, it was never a point where I felt pressured by my family to get out or anything like that. It was pressure I put on myself to be the best dad I could be,
mm-hmm.
and the best husband, but I never once felt pressured to get out.
That is so admirable that you were self-aware enough though. And I think it also speaks to just like so many of us have our motivating factors that don't change until they change. Like you can't will yourself to let go of something until you're really emotionally ready to let go of it. Like when you were ready to not take the 6A coaching job, it was like that wasn't your identity anymore. Your identity was dad, husband, you know, it wasn't like oh gosh, what do I do? It was like, no, this is a no-brainer because that's not who I am first and foremost anymore. So I just think that's really cool that you had like that everything aligned to where you don't have this sad, like, oh, I almost lost everything because I was like gripped onto something so hard kind of story. Like, no, you just kind of like let your life change with your values. And that's really cool.
Yeah. It's interesting how it all happened. And I remember my dad, he was sick at the time and I was talking about getting out, which he's passed away since then, but that was like our thing. And I think that was another thing when he passed.
Uh-huh.
He passed going into my first season at the new school. So he didn't get to see us go in and rebuild
it.
So, yeah. But I remember we won the opening game. We just blew the team out of the water. And I didn't know what to expect. I mean, we're coming to this place where we had not been very good. So they had not been very good. We come in and we look like rock stars. We go out. Kids are playing out of their minds, playing hard. And I remember just getting on the bus after the game and crying because I'd always call my dad after every game.
You're going to make me cry. That's so sweet.
No, don't cry. But anyway.
Well, no, what you'll learn about me is like anything makes me cry. So it's not hard. Low bar. Anyways, you're on the bus and you're like hitting you that you can't call your dad.
Yeah. Yeah. And it just kind of hit me like, you know, and my kids were at home asleep, my wife, and I started thinking about how short life is. I mean, he died at 65.
Yeah.
And I was just like, you know, I think I can let this go. Like, it feels great.
Yeah.
But I don't know if I'm going to do this after this year, because you're riding a bus at midnight. Same thing you were doing when you're 16 years old and you got the priority of raising little kids. So
that's true. And you, like, arguably, that's like the best you're going to feel. Like, you defied odds. Like, that sounds like kind of a movie sports kind of story of making this team turn around. So it's like, if that's what you're thinking on the bus ride home, it's like, what are you chasing that's going to make it worth it? Because to me, it sounds like you had the most, like, you were going to get, not just only because the win, but like making that life change for those kids that had only been, no offense to them, losers. It sounds like, you know, all of a sudden they were winners. Like, that's the mecca of being a head football coach in high school, is like, and it's still, you were thinking about your girls. I mean, I just, so.
Well, it was crazy too. You say that, I just realized this, or I just remembered it. After that win, those kids acted like we won the Super Bowl. It was a non-conference season opening game. And I'm sitting there just like, they were all losing their mind. And I was like, what are they so excited about? We just won a game.
Oh, you weren't that excited either?
I was excited, but I was already thinking about the next one. So at the school I came from, though, it was a perennial, very good program. Right. Desark is every year. And so we expected to win.
And you trained to win. I mean, that's why they won. Because you did as a coach worked.
Right, right. Yeah, and we did. I had good staff and we had some good kids. And it was awesome. The whole coaching experience was great. But it got to the point where I didn't even enjoy the wins anymore, because I was just so worried about the next one. You were just trying to figure out. And then as soon as the season went in, I'd start thinking about next year. What do we got to do? And it just wears on you.
I'm going to get us off track a little bit, because I think that is just being a natural born competitor, because I do have to do a lot of self-talk and affirmations to not let this job eat me alive, because I am constantly thinking about my life in 30-day intervals and what's like, what I've got going, what's got to close, what I've got in the pipeline. And then you kind of zoom out about, oh yeah, I had a great year, but I'm already worried about the next year. Like, what is arguably a core part of who you are and who I am and what make us not just successful, but love the job and love the energy of the job. Because if you don't have that kind of spirit, this is not for you.
No, no, it's not. You've got to be a competitor. And I mean, I think this, you're right. That's a really good way to, I think that drives success in this business, but you got to be careful in not letting it eat you alive and control or be who you are. And I'll talk about that in a minute. But so anyway, fast forward, principal. So when I bought my house, when I moved in 2018, and I bought my house, and I used a loan officer by the name of Russell Wolf. And Russell is my regional manager now. But anyway, so Russell was our loan officer. And there was a guy that worked here that was a coaching friend of mine. He mentioned my name to Russell. And Russell was like, I did his loan like 3 years ago. And he said, I think that guy'd be great, because he we got chummy during the loan process. Imagine me talking the ears off of somebody. But anyway, so we get chummy and Russell's like, yeah, he'd be great. I'd love to get him on there. I go meet with Russell and Glenn, and I don't know anything about, and then they're both just like, you'll do great. You just got to be yourself and sell yourself. That's all you got to do.
How long did you contemplate this?
Oh, months. I didn't hate it necessarily. Like, I didn't enjoy it. No, you're good. I didn't enjoy it like I did coaching. Like, I didn't feel like that was my purpose, basically. And I still wasn't making that much money. But I was dealing with bull crap. It was just, you deal with negative. That's all you do.
You totally, like, I think if you have anybody in that world that you, yourself or that you care about, like, commend educators on all levels, because somebody's got to do it. But yeah, it, that ain't it. I mean, it's a lot
it,
of,
it is,
yeah.
It is all, it is a thankless, in a lot of ways, a thankless job.
So you're contemplating this for months, actually.
Months. Yeah. Months. And then, cause I'm scared of the commission. I've been salary. I've been nothing but salary my whole life. I didn't know how commission was going
to
work.
And I don't know if I've ever said this on here, but just, I guess, to zoom out, cause I don't talk mortgage on here a lot, Drake. I talk it like,
right.
I sprinkle it in here and there, but you know, there's a lot of ways lenders can get paid. So like if, you know, there's so, but like where the world we live in, private mortgage world, a lot of times, like, we are all commission based employees. So you're going with just saying, I'm going to get paid off what I produce, and that's it. So it is a big difference because there's no guarantees, really.
Well, and I did it different because, you know, Glenn offered, he, when I came in or when I was getting ready to figure out if I want to do it, Glenn was like, we can put you on a salary, you know, and you can get tiered commission based on what you do. You know, that's an option to get you started. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, you can go full commission. And he was like, if you, you know, you're going to make more money on commission and you can close less loans and make what you'd make on a salary. Anyway, so I'm like, you know what? I've got, we can live off our savings for realistically 6 months. Like, I was like, I know for a fact we can live off that. And it was me. My wife stays home with the kids. So at that time they weren't in school. So it was me, Laura, and the girls. And Laura was like, do it. I trust you. Just do it. And so I said, I'm going full commission.
Well, that's something to say. I didn't even know that you considered anything else, because at the sales retreat, Glenn had talked about that. He was like, this dude went commission only right away because it knew it'd make him work harder.
Yeah. Yeah. No, he offered me the other option and I was like, nah, I think I'll hustle more and try to go get more deals if I don't have anything to fall back on. And you know what? It worked. And so I, yeah. So the,
hey, you want a home loan? But it's like, yeah, I guess during the refi boom, if you had a pulse, like, you could probably, like, have, like, there's maybe a 30% chance they have a mortgage at least.
When I got started, the refinance boom was going on. And so
genius.
It was right at the back end of the refinance boom when I started in 2021, in the fall. And so I went through and text every person in my phone. Every single person, and was like, hey, I'm getting a mortgage. If you need a refinance, if you've had your house, if you bought it before 2020, you've got equity, give me a call. And so before I knew it, I had all these refinances coming in while I was trying to build relationships with realtors. So the refinances kept me afloat and fed my family while I was building relationships. And then it just boomed. So
what a blessing, though. Good for you.
That was how I was trying to make my money at that point, just trying to get going. And and it really worked out. I got a lot of purchase business. I knew my number one referral partner, me and her grew up together, and it just worked out where she had been using Russell, the regional that brought me on. Russell was phasing into regional and not producing just at the time I got hired. And so it worked out to where she was like, well, I'm going to send Drake some stuff. And then Russell was like, well, that's fine. I'm not really doing anything. So I kind of stole her from Russell.
But you have taken these bricks that he has given you and made them into a house. Like I said before on the show, like, you know, you can be handed a brick and break a window with it. Now, I didn't think of this. Pastor Allie at my church did. I love her. But anyways, she told me this in a time in my life I really needed it. And it's so applicable because it's like, I think sometimes when you're feeling blessed, it's like, and this is getting me to one of my points of like to put the humility aside, which I know you have, but it is probably pretty surreal to think like you have gotten blessings, but what have you have made it something out of it. And like, does it ever kind of like, any points during this, especially like after coming out like two or three in the company, your first full year, were you like, whoa? Or were you still in that on to the next game mentality? Because now that I know you, like, this is not the first time you've defied odds. And that's special. I mean, that's really cool, Drake.
Oh, the Lord has blessed me beyond belief. I'm so stinking lucky and blessed. Like, it's crazy. That's the only reason
But those are the people that desperately need to be helped, because those are the people that other people are going to say, no, it's honestly like ROI is like, you're probably working sometimes 25 cents an hour, you know, by the time it's all said and done. But it's like, you know, to me, when you get to the closing table on some of those are the most rewarding, because you think if nobody else would have given you the time, you know, how many other people would have given you the time? There are other people out there, but the law of averages of you getting to one of those other people, if I would have brushed you off, like, you know, unfortunately in our line of work, they're not a dime a dozen. People that really take the time to think creatively. Sometimes if stuff isn't easy, they're like, eh, nope, can't work. Move on.
It's kind of my thing. It's kind of what I like. Like, I like to prove people wrong. Like, even with a loan, that's like a bad loan. And people are like, oh, like if an underwriter suspends one of my files, I'm like, well, you're going to lose. That's like instantly my thought process. Like, I'm going to fix this no matter what it takes. So that's kind of the way my brain works. And sometimes it wears on me, because I take on Adam, one of our loan officers here, gets on to me all the time. He's like, you take on all these stinking bad loans that you're just trying to help people, and then you end up losing your mind. And I'm like, it's true.
So much of service-based business is a numbers game. And that's one of those things that I was just telling somebody last night at an open house, that I was excited to talk to you, because one of the things, and I still think this is true, and that you have accelerated what I believe is the truth, but that the hardest part of establishing your service-based business should be the first X amount of years.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because of what you said. Because if you are taking care of people, and if you are doing what you say you're going to do, they're going to continue to tell those other people that they know, and the people that do business with you regularly, like realtors, title companies, they see like, oh, for 3 years, Drake has never told me something that he's not been able to do. Huh, I should take note of that. It's like, no, it's not a fluke. I didn't just do this one deal fast, or I didn't just, you know, make this one no turn into a yes. Like, no, this is just what I do.
Yeah, no, there is a lot of that. And, you know, I've also found that those people are the most appreciative, in the sense of they're going to shout your name from a rooftop. So if you close one of them, it's not necessarily about it's the thought process of on to the next. Right. So I close them. Yeah, that loan's great. Like, that's good. They're going to tell 7 to 8 other people about me to call me, and I'm going to get referrals based on, I mean, I've had that happen countless times.
And so for me, like, seeing and how you've done it is really admirable, because, like I said, it's one of the truths that I also think could turn into an excuse really easy is, well, I just haven't been doing it as long as that person, or blah, blah, blah. And then it's like, I join a company where I'm in the top 3 at the point of like where I'm leaving, top 1, like very regularly. And I'm thinking, like, I get comfortable and I'm just working through just day in and day out. And I also think it speaks to, like I said, your environment impacts how you can impact you in small ways, subconscious ways, because I was just content. And I was like doing my thing. I finally felt like I knew my job. Like, I finally felt like I could breathe, because I actually like knew what the heck I was doing, you know, got into a groove, all the things. And then I come and join First Trust. I'm like a little peon here amongst all these big fish. And I don't know if I really enjoy that. And then it's like, as you start to hear, you know, you're one of a few stories of great success in a short period of time. And it's like, crap, nobody can say like, oh, well, I can't compare myself to this person because they've been doing it for 20 years or whatever. It's like, nope. Drake's been doing it for 12 months. He was, you know, and he wasn't even in banking or anything prior to this. And so I just think that, you know, you have defied odds in that way. That is really funny that it really squashes a lot of what people, I think, in our line of work tell themselves about, oh, why I can't be successful.
Yeah, I think that's true. You know, I think success a lot of times is a mindset. And so I think certain people, if you have the right mindset, it doesn't matter what you do. If you focus on it and you think you're going to be successful, then you're going to be successful. Like, that's just, I think you got to have a certain mentality. When I was coaching, it was always like, are you the lion or are you the gazelle? Like, that was always the kind of the thought process. Or I'd always say,
I've heard that.
Yeah. Yeah. That was the thought. I think Dale does it some. And then,
is what he said. He said it too.
Yeah, but we used it coaching all the time. I did it before Dale. The other thing was like, are you a pit bull? Are you a chihuahua? Like, you got to figure out, are you the pit bull that like is going to attack and just, you know, finish it? So like, you got to have that mentality in business some too. And the other thing that helps me, and I want to say this, when I got started and even now, is Peyton, my manager. Peyton helped me understand how to think outside the box on making things work. And Russell's good at it too, but Peyton is really good at figuring out ways to make things work. And so now that I've got experience, I feel like I don't need a lot of help anymore.
Yeah.
But when I do, and me and him are together on it, we can usually, one of us is going to
figure it out
a way to make it work. So,
oh, yeah. Well, and that's what, like, the loyalty I have to Lauren for the same reason. I mean, when I got into mortgage, I'd never had a mortgage. I'd never applied for a mortgage. I mean, truly, I had not given one thought ever. Because what was I? 23-ish? So, like, I hadn't even been through the process. You know, I mean, there were just so many things that I had not even thought about even as a consumer. And that I just felt like a total fish out of water. And I, you know, have like so much loyalty to Lauren, who not only taught me how to do this, but has like been the resource for getting stuff fixed and thinking about stuff that I never would have thought about. And it is really exciting when you start to like have your brain work that way on your own. Now, granted, I mean, I still always, you know, am always want to learn and like think a sec, two minds are better than one. So I will never
mortgage,
grow
you
out
learn
of
something
that,
new every day. So
yes. And then by the time you think, you know, something else has changed and then there's something else to learn, but you,
oh yeah. Yeah. No, that happens constantly. It's an always evolving. I think that's one thing that's fun about it though, is it is constantly, every day is a new day. Every day is different. There's never the same day. So it makes it fun. People are like, oh, I can't just go sit in an office and do the same thing. Like, it's never the same day. There's always something new.
I say it's like Sudoku, that like you fix something over here and then this messes up over here and it just is always a different.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That is correct.
Transitioned us into the next like segment of questions I had for you about, you know, so does the coach like being coached? I mean, and the questions I have here are more like, you know, there's a lot of noise in the mortgage world and really in sales about the to-dos of business, how you can be successful. You know, there's all these different methods of trying to be better. Do you look into that stuff on your own? Do you take value in that? Or have you just kind of found a way that works for you and just like chug along and don't think about a lot about, you know, trying to make your actual like business plan structure better? Like, what has been your story there? Because I think, see, people are successful both ways.
As far as like, are you saying as far as like stay not really looking for ways to change or like?
I'm just looking at like, did you find your way of the way stuff that worked for you? Like, apparently I know you have this legendary spreadsheet and some different things that, you know, you figured out like a good way to kind of take a pulse in your business. Like, do you take the time to try to think about working on your business instead of in your business? Like, do you find ways to be coached about like, how can I run, like, think of your your business, you know, as a business, how can I do things better?
Oh, yeah.
Do you look for like sales coaching in that way? Or are you just like, nope, I'm chugging along and like, I know what I need to do?
A little bit of both. Like I'm always looking for new ideas because I feel like if you're not ever trying to improve or get better and you remain stagnant, you know, stagnant may be good, but at some point stagnant is going to go backwards. So I want to always right. find a little bit of something to improve on. The problem is finding time to do these things that you have. I get these great ideas and then I just don't have time to do them because I want to make sure I'm being very intentional as a dad. And I want to make sure that I'm really trying to, I mean, I'm always trying to get more business. And so here's the way our model, the way we do it, I'll just lay it out. So you talk about my spreadsheet, right? So there's a couple different spreadsheets and I just love spreadsheets. So that's why Ben makes fun of me all the time. But anyway, so I've got a pre-approval spreadsheet and what I've got on that one is, you know, their name. These are the pre-approvals. Here's their name. And everybody, somebody would say, well, that's in Encompass, but I can't access Encompass on my phone while I'm out at a steakhouse. So, you know, I've got a pre-approval list on a Google, and I use Google, so Google Sheets.
That is so funny because my self-care tip of the week, I'm just going to say it right now, says try Google Docs and Sheets, Doc and Sheets, because it's so easy to find stuff accessible everywhere and on all devices.
It is the best. Best thing.
Look at you.
it's the best thing. That's what I put all my stuff on. And so
that's so funny that you said that. I love that you stole my thunder.
Well, okay. And so I keep this pre-approval sheet, right? And it's got their name, what the max pre-approval amount is. Now that's tricky because my big question I always ask is, what do you want your max payment to be? Because if I tell them they're pre-approved at 400,000, but they don't want to pay it over 1500, then that's irrelevant. It doesn't help anybody. So
this is very micro level in your business. This is not like broad strokes of things.
No. Yeah, no. This is my brain. So because I can't retain all of it. So I put it in organized fashion and then I don't have to retain all of it. I can roll. And then so somebody, I've got that, the loan type, where the referral came from. So if someone calls me and says, hey, what did you say they could do? What's their pre-approval amount? I'll look like it's a realtor or the buyer themselves. I'll just pull my little deal up on my phone, my Google sheet, and say, yep, you're good at 155. And I usually note in there max payment this. So I know if that's the max approval. So that way, if they find a house that's 200, and they really got to have it, even if it's over their payment, then I can say, yeah, they're approved. They're yeah. It's just for me to be able to have a conversation mm-hmm. when I'm not at my computer and say they're good at 155 on FHA. They want their payment to be this. So we don't need to go over that. So that's one spreadsheet. Oh, and at the bottom of it, I've got nurture leads too. So like if somebody's a credit repair or improve, I keep that down there. So when I'm going through every week and calling all my people and checking on them, mm-hmm. I hit those nurtures too, to make sure, because I save them in my phone. Mm-hmm. So that way I
see. And what I would say all of this is working in your business, not on your business.
Right.
And this is great. But like, and I will say, no, this is comforting to me because I'm like, okay, Drake is an actual human being. This is their rubber's meeting the road here. You're struggling with the same stuff because I think sometimes also, like I said, you know, you start pay setting yourself off somebody from afar and you don't really know what are they doing? What are their struggles? And I think that, you know, you named the biggest one, time. And where do you spend it to be able to take care of people, have work-life balance, but also like intentionally grow? And I mean, because you only have so much time in the day.
Well, and I go pick my daughter up. I try to pick Maggie up from school every day. So I try to leave the office at 2:30, 2:45 to go pick her up. Now, when I get home, I'll still work more. But mm-hmm. like I take one of them usually to school. So mm-hmm. I get here about 8:30 and I've started just kind of working through lunch. So I get here about 8:30 to 2:30 And then that's kind of my heavy hitting time.
So most days you're at your desk all day?
Most days. Now, as far as working on my business, I do try to at least 1 week of the month, like I'll just try to set up lunches, boom, 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 with multiple people. I try to, that's like new business. And then I also take my current realtors, I'll take them to lunch. I try to be really good about that. And it's hard.
So you do have some method to your madness here, but it is one of those struggles that.
Oh, that yeah. When you said I was balancing all the plates or whatever, I'm not. Like I have to.
Do you are you a self-habit part? Like, do you do listen, read anything self-help, habit, anything like that? Is that your jam or no?
No, I read investment books. Like, that's like I'm obsessed with real estate investment books. And
have you ever read Rich Dad, Poor Dad?
Yeah, I love it. Yeah, it's really good. It changed the way I think about a lot of things.
It does. Okay.
After I read that is when I started really diving in. I've just read Killing Sacred Cows.
And was this before you were in real estate?
No.
Or this was already, so it was a good piece. It was a good transition to be in the industry.
Oh my gosh,
yeah. Your brain was already thinking about this stuff. What did you say about Killing Sacred Cows?
It's a book. It's an interesting book. It's an interesting financial read on
interesting.
Yeah,
Killing Sacred Cows.
Killing Sacred Cows. He's basically taking what he's saying.
I've never heard of that one.
All right. So, for instance, 401k is like a societal sacred cow. Like, you got to have 401k, okay. Right?
Oh, okay.
And I do have it. Like, I fully
no judgment here. Judgment free zone, Drake. You do whatever you kill whatever sacred cows you need.
But the thought process of it is, okay, the money you're putting in that, are you really truly getting a huge return on it like you think? Or would your money be better served going into like investment properties because it's not really your money.
That's like not paying taxes ahead of time.
That's a good point. Yeah.
Like not doing like killing sacred cows is like, I guess, not doing the max deduction to make sure that you get a refund, but instead like taking the gamble of I'm going to use that money to make more money and then just pay the government all at once.
Right.
It's another sacred cow, I guess, huh?
Yeah. I don't want.
Sounds like it.
Yeah, I could get into taxes. I've been diving into tax law lately. It's been like my new obsession.
How you get there is a happy place. the line we have to draw is getting into that.
But anyway, so I do have some structure because I am semi OCD about things like with my spreadsheet and stuff. The other spreadsheet I have is my commission spreadsheet, and it's super detailed too, with like different tabs of months, year to date, all these different things. So that's why they mess with me. But anyway, I do actively try to set up lunches or drop by offices. I do. The biggest thing though, I feel like for me is making the referral partners I have, keeping them happy. And so closing their deals is great. And that's what they want. But I try to do a little extra to make sure they stay with me. And then if I'm trying to get new business, I'm going after big fish. Like that's kind of my thought because I'm fortunate enough. I've got enough business right now to where I'm trying to get deal with less people as far as realtors go and more like less realtors, but they give me more deals type situation. So I keep my people. I spend a lot of time, majority of my time on my
nurturing.
Business is nurturing current partners. Yep.
Okay. Very interesting.
I'm all over the place.
Part of what led me to kind of where I've got my like business plan, my energy, some of the things now is I almost hit a breaking point with saying, okay, well, I was struggling a lot with this person does it this way, so I need to do it exactly like this person, or this person is successful doing it over here. So, and I really had self-doubt of like sticking to the course of what I was, where I was walking. But really why was because I'd never really sat down and thought, what do I want my business to look like? Where do I want my energy to go, instead of only listening to like what I ought to be doing from like, he's great, but like a Dale, or then there, cause there's like, you know, where there, I believe there's only one Dale, but you know, there are Dale like people, and you could have, you know, talk to a different one every single day of the year and then tell you a little bit of a different of what you need to do, what the secret sauce is, whatever. And so did you ever, have you had moments of struggling with that? Or, you know, did you just see what works and have been able to stay the course for you? Because we are in a great company where there's a lot of people being like that are very successful. Not all, you know, nobody's doing it the exact same way.
Right. I think I've taken ideas from people, but I really just want to do what works for me, because my business is built off of being authentic. Like with me, what you see is what you get. I'm a country boy from BB, Arkansas, and I've been that guy, and I'm not going to be anybody but that guy. So like, that's just, and they laugh at me sometimes because I'm so stinking brutally honest with the customers, but the customers like it. Like I'll say stuff sometimes and William will like, William's my assistant. By the way, William's the thing that makes this go. William is, he's a lifesaver.
He's making the wheels turn.
Oh, yeah. He's a machine.
You get to a point where you can't grow without, like, you have to have the leverage. Yeah, you have to have the leverage of help. Yeah. Well, how long were you doing it by yourself before you gained an assistant?
So I did it when I first started. I did it by myself. And the first year we had an office LOA that just handled everybody's in the office. But then volume picked up and I started doing so much more volume than I had that it was like, okay, they can't handle everybody's stuff. So then we had a guy that did it. He's no longer with the company and he was great. But then he left. And this is when I really started last year kind of blowing up a little bit. And he was handling it so I could go get more and more and more. Well, then he left and I was like stuck 2 months doing it by myself. And I was having like, you know, $3 million, $4 million month. And I'm about to like lose my mind. I'm like, I don't want this. So I don't want to do all this. And
this ain't it. Yeah.
Yeah, no, the quality of life is not worth it. Like, and then so William at the time was Hunter Strong, who's, for people that don't know, is our number one producer and like a freak of nature on loans. But
I would just like, no offense to him, I just like, he's off in his own little world that I don't want to be in. And so that's where I'm like, you're doing great.
Zero interest.
Nope. I just don't even want to know you. I'm like, okay, this is marginal growth that I'm about.
Mine's Hunter, manageable.
Go be like, Hunter. Go be Hunter. Not, yeah. I didn't have a podcast. I'd rather have a podcast.
He can't do anything else. He closed 45 loans last month for $7 million. Like you can't do anything else.
Like I said, own little box. Yeah.
Yeah. So William was doing Hunter stuff while Hunter's assistant was gone on maternity leave. So Peyton was trying to get me figured out because he knew I was drowning. And he was like, William, you're going to handle Drake and Hunter stuff. So William handled both of us for 2 months and knocked it out of the park. And so then I was like, I will gladly pay some of my bips to have William be my assistant. And so that's what we've done.
And that means that William is getting a piece of the pie with Drake for his production. So when Drake wins, William wins.
Right. And now if William closes any of his own, Drake also wins. So it works out well. But so
William is the blonde with the good hair. Right.
He's the really good looking one. Like, it's not the, like, and then we're bringing on another guy. I can't say who it is yet, but he's also really good looking. So I've just surrounded myself with
good looking guys.
Yeah. I mean, when you got an ogre that's here, you gotta,
like this, the mortgage version, male selling sunset, male mortgage selling sunset.
Yes. But now they're all, I've got them in different areas. So like they're hitting.
Oh, so you're really.
Yeah. Cause we got to spread out, but anyway, so William, the way we do it is I handle all the front end work. So I do all the pre-approvals. I talk to all the numbers with the buyers. And then when they get under contract, pretty much I give them a phone call and say, hey, from here on, if you have any questions about numbers, you call me. Otherwise, documentation, anything like that, you're calling William. So like, he's going to be reaching out to you shortly. He's going to request any documents we need. But if you have any questions at all, you call me. I'm still your loan officer. William just works for me. So, and never an issue. They're always like, okay, great. And then you know what? I just try to move on and go get another one.
And you have to accept that at some point you have to leverage and you can't white glove everything by you through the whole process. Like, you have to trust somebody else with your book of business and know that, like I said, when you win, they win. When they do the job well, they win. Mm-hmm. And that's, yeah. I mean, you really are growing a team again. This goes into another good question. So I guess from the world you were living in where coaching, you know, you were had to be 100% present, couldn't be working away. You were on the field working. I mean, I know you probably worked at home, playbooks, film, that kind of stuff. But
yeah, I'd never stop.
So now work-life balance, even though maybe to some people it may not be what they're after, I guess work-life balance for you is pretty good to what you were used to because you are able to go get your girls. You are able to, you know, work from home. Do you still struggle with that now? Or let me ask you, after being on your own and having no option other than to do that, did it put into perspective like trying to be better about your time and not letting it be the end all be all?
Yeah, my first year in the business, I kind of lost myself a little bit as far as what was important to me and made some, just was not myself, made some really stupid decisions. And so I think I figured out really quickly, like, that's not your identity. It's not who you are. Your life should not be about that. Like, that is what you do and it is important, but you are a husband and a dad and a supposed to be a godly example of those two things. So, you know, that's, I've had to figure that out. And my first year, I kind of lost sight of that. And then I was like, well, the whole point of this thing was to be with you for your family. And so, what are you doing? And Peyton's been good too, because Peyton's a big family guy. So his family's really important to him. And so he kind of checks me on it if I lose sight of the big picture on that. So
yeah,
we kind of take care of each other on that deal. But anyway, so.
Do you work on vacation? Do you ever totally unplug?
I try not to. I try not to. Like, we just went to Dallas for like 4 days of spring break. And I would check my email at night on my phone and would check in with William. I think I actually just talked about files maybe 10 minutes a day. So I truly unplugged, but that's because I've got William and I've got Peyton and they know like you need to unplug.
So, and sometimes you have to accept like opportunity cost, which is really hard. And I think in our line of work, because you're like, if I'm not available, are they going to call somebody else? Are they going to be patient with me? But I think back to like just what you said, that's where you really, and I don't see, you know, personally having so much, so deep roots in my faith of that's the only kind of place I can understand of how to manage it. Of, you know, I try to tell myself all the time, like, this is not the Lord of my life. So I don't need to act like it. Like, because do my actions show that? Because, and sometimes it's like, you know, I got to trust like God is going to take care of me. And if I'm like beyond that is pride. And do I really, and it's hard though sometimes. And that was one of the, you know, one of the biggest struggles I've had of, am I really worried about not losing this business or not getting this call or not getting this deal while I'm on vacation? Because like, I think it's best for my family, or is it just strictly because I'm competitive to a fault?
Yeah, you know? I do that too. I have to think of those things. And I saw a deal that was like, your kids will not remember how much that you worked so hard or something like that. It was like, they'll remember what you missed. And so I don't want my kids to look back on these things and remember dad was just working all the time. I want it to be, man, dad was present. He was always there. Yeah. He was always willing to play Barbies and just always, you know, all in on whatever we were doing. So I want them to be that way. And there's times, and my wife's good about understanding this, there's times to where we just got to work. Like, there's not another option. You have to work. Like, at night, sometimes you're going to have to work. You're going to have to work an app. You're going to have to take a call. Phone calls are money. So, I mean, now what I did on vacation was leave my phone in the room. And then I just didn't. But I also did that because every referral partner I sent an email to before I go on vacation and say, I'm leaving. Here's my app link. I put the link in there for them to be able to forward to their people. If they have any questions, here's William's email and his phone number. Feel free to reach out. But I will be back this day, and I will reach back out to them on those days. And so that allows it to where they'll leave me alone because they'll all send me messages, have a great vacation, yada, yada. And then they don't bother me. Like, so yeah. I figured out that's really good.
And there's value in the boundary that, like, other people on the other side have vacations where they don't want to be bothered either.
Yeah.
You know, the people, I remember I had a deal last summer that about gave me a nervous breakdown while I was in Jamaica with Chad. And I mean, to the point where I was like, I mean, it was just a perfect storm. Like, we all got it all worked out. It worked. But I remember that those people, they did not care at all. They really, like, they were not appreciative. They were not the kind of, they're not my ideal client, I guess, to put it shortly. Yeah. And I thought after it was all over, I was like, I just ruined it the last day and a half with my husband that I already don't get to see a lot because of the professional choices we have both made and support each other on. And they literally don't care.
Right.
Like, so all I did, like, I just let that happen to me, you know, because, and I know if I would have stayed out of it, somebody would have figured it out.
Oh, yeah.
And it was one of those things of where I was like, nobody, like, You can't expect somebody to even appreciate what you're sacrificing. Like, you've got to be okay with it. And I really wasn't. I did it, you know, and it was begrudgingly. And I thought after that, like, I'll never do this again because there's just such a fine balance there of when is it really worth it? Because I just thought, I just ruined my own vacation over something that. Yeah, and it's not worth it because sometimes I have to even go to the far end of like, okay, worst case scenario, every single loan in my pipeline could blow up. And I have to think, you know what? I'll still probably have business because I know other companies that just squash things and like their phones are still ringing. And I have to almost tell myself like that in a high level, you know, way to like make myself back down. But like you said, the easiest way to do it is just not even have the phone with you. And there's so much awareness and just realizing like that's the natural cutoff.
Well, and you just take everything so personal and you make everything on you. Like, I've got a customer right now that has been a nightmare trying to get docs, trying to get anything organized. It's been a nightmare. And there's an international currency thing. Anyway, we have done everything we can, but closing just keeps getting pushed for various reasons. And it's none of our fault. It's not anything we've done. But I'm sitting here every day like, oh, man, we have really botched it on this one. And, you know, I'm sitting around stressing about it. And then the realtor sends me another deal. Like, and I'm just like, you know, people understand more. We put more pressure on ourselves than anybody else does. And so, but you're right on the, I had to learn that on the family time and all that. Like, you know, if they're not patient enough to understand, hey, I'll call you back in like an hour, I'm doing this, then I don't want to work with them. Like, that's not, I don't have time to deal with it.
Drake, we had a great conversation. We got 60 minutes. It was nice to put a meeting of the minds here. But I just thank you for sharing your story with us. And I really, it's a cool one. And I think that there's a lot that people, I know I got out of it, and that I know others will too.
Hopefully. Either way, it was fun. I enjoyed visiting. That's why this has been such a good fit for me, because I've never been scared to talk in front of people or try to, like, I probably should have been a lawyer, but I like this a lot better.
The thing that only cost you your time, and I appreciate it, is letting somebody else hear it may impact just, and if it's like just for the one that can get something out of this that you don't know, or like, to me, that's a huge part of my why for this, is because there is a lot that can look one way and you don't see the nuts and bolts behind it that make it the reality. But also there, you know, are the stories, like you said, about that you can be on the mountaintop of something that you said you wanted to do forever and admit that it's not it anymore. Yes. And it may be the decision that leads you to something that you never in your wildest dreamed imagined you'd be doing, but seem to come to work and love, and have, like you said, gotten a village of everybody other than your wife and your girls that you mentioned you didn't have before you were in this world. Well, thank you so much for being here, Drake. And I can't wait to see what all you accomplish this year. Thank you for joining me this week. I hope this episode met you where you were at and it's given you your own clarity on steps forward for how you get there. Wherever and whatever that is, it is important and your dreams matter. I would love to hear what you think of this episode and how you get there. You can connect with me personally via email at howyougetthere@gmail.com. Or you can find me at Rach Ross Denson on Instagram, TikTok, and all other social media platforms. If you love How You Get There, I have a favor to ask. Will you share this episode with a friend and take a few seconds to follow, rate, and review How You Get There wherever you listen to your podcast? Please know you are playing a part in making my dream come to life. And for that, I am so grateful. Don't forget, if where you want to go in the future involves a home loan, I would love to help you. Find me on Instagram at @RachelDenson_MLO to learn all about mortgages from my videos, or use the link in the bio to schedule a one-on-one consultation with me. I hope to see you back here next week, where we'll keep talking all about how you get there.